I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State's Joe Kent breaks with Donald Trump on Iran, resigns his post with the administration. Plus, Seattle leaders just come out and say it. They want to hide the homeless before the World Cup. And the people's sheriff is running for re-election. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Washington State's Joe Kent causing quite the kerfuffle nationally this morning. It was funny. I was like, Nicole, let's reach out to Joe Kent, see if he'll come on the show. And then I was reading these posts on X that he's expected to have this blockbuster interview with Tucker Carlson. Now, I know our podcast is important, but, you know, I guess that maybe he'd choose Tucker Carlson instead of us, but we'll continue to try to get him on. So, of course, Joe Kent, a former two-time congressional candidate in Washington State's 3rd District, lost twice to Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, a Democrat who's the current congresswoman in that district. But after he lost the last time, he was appointed by President Trump to lead the National Counterterrorism Center. Well, he's resigned from that post as of this morning, breaking with the Trump administration over the war in Iran. He posted the letter he sent to President Trump. He said, after much reflection, I've decided to resign from my position of Director of National Counterterrorism, effective today. I cannot in good conscience support the ongoing war in Iran. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, and it is clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. Well, gee, now I understand why he's going on Tucker Carlson first. That sounds like a sentence written by Tucker Carlson. He says, I support the values and the foreign policies that you campaigned on in 2016, 2020, and 2024, which you enacted in your first term. Until June of 2025, you understood that the wars in the Middle East were a trap that robbed America of the precious lives of our patriots and depleted the wealth and prosperity of our nation. In your first administration, you understood better than any modern president how to decisively apply military power without getting us drawn into never-ending wars. You demonstrated this by killing Qasem Soleimani and defeating ISIS. And he goes on and on from there. Now, first, let me just say, Joe Kent is a Gold Star husband. He served our country. His wife died in service to this country. I believe he's entitled to very strong opinions about war. I believe he's entitled, as is every American, but especially Americans who have worn the cloth of our country and who have endured great sacrifice as a result. I'm not going to be overly critical of their opinions on how American troops are used in battle. I'm just not. However, there might be a little bit more going on behind the scenes as to what led to his decision to resign. But first, here's what President Trump had to say about it.
Well, I read his statement. I always thought he was a nice guy, but I always thought he was weak on security, very weak on security. I didn't know him well, but I thought he seemed like a pretty nice guy. But when I read his statement, I realized that it's a good thing that he's out, because he said that Iran was not a threat. Iran was a threat. Every country realized what a threat Iran was. The question is whether or not they wanted to do something about it. And many people, many of the greatest military scholars are saying for years that presidents should have taken out Iran because they wanted a nuclear weapon.
Yeah. Although the president says there, I always thought he was weak on security. Then why did you appoint him the head of counterterrorism? That literally makes no sense. So if you always thought he was weak, you probably shouldn't have given him that job. But, you know, what the president's talking about there in this rift that we're seeing amongst conservatives, the idea of whether Iran posed an imminent threat to the United States, the word imminent is totally subjective. What does an imminent threat mean? To me, the fact that there was a disrupted plot to kill President Trump by Iran, that's an imminent threat to our nation. I mean, what is it? Is imminent we have to wait until they've got ballistic missiles that can reach the United States and they're pointed and they're about to hit the button? I mean, it is very clear that Iran for a very long time has posed an imminent threat to the United States, whether it's to our members of the military who are serving overseas in places that Iran's capabilities can reach, or whether it's them sending up people through our southern border to sit here in sleeper cells until they attack the country and attack Americans. So it's a totally subjective term. But Joe Kent has been criticized this morning by some on the right, in part because it seems like some of his past statements have suggested that Iran poses an imminent threat to the United States. This was a post from 2024. He said Iran has been after Trump since January of 2020 after he ordered the targeted killing of Soleimani. This isn't a new threat. The Secret Service consistently failing to secure Trump is new. We need to figure out exactly why these failures keep happening. Now, you know, and some people using that as, well, he said that Iran posed a threat to Trump. But in this, he seems to be suggesting we needed to bolster Secret Service security for Trump, not necessarily engage in a war against Iran overseas. There was a reaction here from a Gold Star wife. Again, he's a Gold Star husband, and she was not pleased with the position that Joe Kent took in the letter that he sent to the president this morning. Her name is Cheryl Ann. She said, Gold Star wife here, when ISIS killed your wife, you supported going after the people responsible. You understood exactly why we were fighting and never called it Israel's war. My husband, Alan, was killed by Iranian proxies in Iraq. And now, after decades, the fight is finally leading back to the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world. You understood it when it was your loss. Now you're minimizing it when it's mine. You don't get to redefine this war just because it's not your grief anymore. So again, she's entitled to her very strong opinions given the sacrifice that her family has endured for our country. But here is, I think, the kicker that I'm most interested in hearing Joe Kent asked about and answering for. Jackie Heinrich with Fox News, as well as other reporters who cover the White House, are quoting a senior administration official who says Joe Kent was a, quote, known leaker and was cut out of POTUS intelligence briefings months ago. She says he has not been part of any Iran planning discussions or briefings at all. Official also says the White House told the director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, that Kent should be fired for the suspected leaks, but she never fired him. Now, if that's true, it sounds like Joe Kent was on the way out because you can't have your director of counterterrorism not allowed to be part of briefings that have something to do with counterterrorism. So when I read that, I think, did he quit before he was fired? And did he use it as an opportunity to maybe put himself out there or position himself among a certain part of the conservative right and the sort of podcasts and all of those things? I don't know the answer. You know, having met Joe Kent, having interviewed Joe Kent, I had a big, long arc on my feelings about him. You know, I think when I was in mainstream news, I fell into this trap of, oh, he's a right-wing, like, Christian nationalist sort of thing. Of course, I learned to think for myself better once I was out of that environment, met him. You know, he's given a lot to our country. And so, you know, I think he's a good guy. I found him to be an honest-seeming person. But this is something that I think he needs to answer for. And can the administration prove that? Can they prove that there were already these conversations happening behind the scenes about he can't be trusted, he's a known leaker, he's not even going to be part of our briefings on Iran? And if he wasn't part of the briefings on Iran, how can he say definitively in this letter to the president that Iran posed no imminent threat to the United States? So if he goes on Tucker Carlson, I mean, it seems like they both have sort of a anti-Israel animus. And it's not a small faction of the right that has an anti-war animus. There's a lot of Americans who are vehemently opposed to getting the United States involved in conflicts overseas. So that's certainly not unique to Joe Kent. And he's seen the cost of war, right? The price of war. But this element of Israel, back to his letter, it just reeks of the sort of rhetoric from Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson that they did it not because it's clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. So we'll see what Joe Kent has to say in the coming days, but I'd like to hear more from him in a setting that isn't a letter. But will Tucker Carlson question him aggressively? I'm not so sure. All right, let's get to some Seattle news. Man, I love this. I do. Just because we're right about everything all the time, hardly ever wrong. Como News has a headline out. Seattle City Council hears shelter expansion proposal of 500 new beds by June. Interesting. 500 new beds by June. Why June? June. What is happening in June? Oh, yeah, we might have hundreds of thousands of people here from all over the world for the World Cup. It's less than 100 days away. And so Seattle is doing what Seattle has always done, not deal with the homeless crisis 365 days a year in any sort of meaningful form or fashion, but deal with the homeless crisis whenever we're going to have guests. It's like me, whenever I have guests over to my house, I rapidly clean up and I shove all the crap that I leave laying around the house in some drawer somewhere. And then as soon as people leave, it's a mess again. And I leave the dishes in the sink and all of that. That's what Seattle does to the homeless. But here's one thing I will give them credit for. they're at least admitting it. I mean, they're coming right out and acknowledging it. So at this briefing was the chief of staff for Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson. Here's what she said.
The mayor's office is eager to present a shelter acceleration plan that we are hopeful and excited about our partnership with city council to bring that to bear. We would like to bring on 1,000 new units of emergency shelter and emergency housing in 2026. This would be an emergency anyway. We've been in a homelessness state of emergency for over a decade. It has particular timeliness because in about 3 months, our city is about to welcome 250,000 people for the World Cup.
I give them a ton of credit. It used to be previous mayors, Jenny Durkin, Bruce Harrell, there'd be some sort of event going on. And you'd go downtown, it would be spick and span. Like the MLB All-Star Game. You went down to the stadiums, there wasn't a homeless person in sight. And then our friend Jonathan Cho went like 5 blocks south of that, and all the homeless people are like, yeah, they just moved us down here. And even with that overwhelming evidence, the previous mayors would have said, no, this was a scheduled cleanup. Scheduled sweep. And it's like, okay, you really think we're that stupid? So at least they're just coming right out and admitting it, out of sight, out of mind.
Our mayor, and I think all of you, ran on a platform that we want to be able to bring people inside. And it is really important that when we are hosting so many visitors to our city, we have places for those folks to go.
Sorry, not NBA All-Star Game, MLB All-Star Game. Although, if the Sonics come back, maybe there will be an NBA All-Star Game and they'll sweep the homeless people out before that happens around Key Arena. So here's the thing. Fine. Like, I get it. We're having people here. You're having company over. You're going to just, at least you're acknowledging it. I give you a ton of credit for acknowledging it, is we're going to, and they say, oh, no, we're not just sweeping them. This is about shelter beds. We're getting these emergency beds, 1,000 of them, and then we're going to have wraparound services. So the idea would be that you're not just throwing them in a shelter for a couple nights during the World Cup, but you're actually getting them help for the reason that they were homeless in the first place, and then they wouldn't go back to being homeless after the World Cup is done. So if that's what you're doing, like, I really have no issue with that. But how do I know that's not what's going to happen? Well, because, as we've said a million times, you can probably recite this with me, you cannot solve a problem that you refuse to properly identify. And they continue to refuse to properly identify the problem.
We know that right now we have about 4,500 people in the Seattle metro area who are currently unsheltered and sleeping outside. That's from our 2024 point in time count. Of that unsheltered population, about 66% is chronically homeless. So those are folks who've been homeless for a long time and have one or more disabling conditions, typically something related to mental illness or behavioral health challenges.
Drugs. It's just drugs, okay? They refuse to say it. Drug abuse. Oh, can you play that again? Because what was the phrase she used? Can you play it one more time? Sorry.
We know that right now we have about 4,500 people in the Seattle metro area who are currently unsheltered and sleeping outside. That's from our 2024 point in time count.
1,000 beds will help with that.
Of that unsheltered population, about 66% is chronically homeless. So those are folks who've been homeless for a long time and have one or more disabling conditions, something related to mental illness or behavioral health challenges.
Yeah. It's a disabling condition. Yeah, it's called they're addicted to fentanyl. They're addicted to heroin, crack, whatever it is. So if you're not going to admit that, then you're not going to be able to get them the help that they actually need. Let's try again. See if you can come up with a better reason.
Because we have rapidly rising housing costs in our community, compounded with other factors, that the rate in homelessness is increasing faster than the rate the city is responding to the problem.
Ah, yes. Housing costs combined with other factors. Drugs. For the love of God, say it. It's drugs. They just refuse to say it. So they're not going to, these people, even if they get 1,000 shelter beds, which I doubt they're able to accomplish that, and then I doubt they're able to convince 1,000 people to come in off the streets during the World Cup, a time when you're going to have 250,000 people that they can prey on in downtown Seattle, you think that they're going to want to come inside? Yeah, I don't think so. So the problem, it might be better for a short period of time. They'll come in and they'll do the sweeps, but they refuse to say that this is a drug problem. And so whatever help they get these people is going to be insufficient, and then they're going to be back out on the streets. So it's fine. You want to admit we want to get the people off the streets for the World Cup, but let's just call it what it is. You just want the homely looking homeless people to be out of sight for the tourists. You don't care about what the experience is like for Seattleites and Washingtonians who go to the city. You don't care what the experience is like for business owners and for the tourism industry that has to deal with this all the time. You just care what the headlines are going to be like during and after the World Cup. So let's all just be honest about it. You want to just get the homeless people swept away like I hide all the junk around my house when I have company over. All right, coming up next, the decision from Starbucks to open up a second HQ in Tennessee might be more of a move than they first hinted at to the public, so we'll discuss. First, let's see, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. If you're thinking about selling your home, maybe moving out of state or something like that, he is the guy to use. That's Jim H. used Wes Jones to sell his home when he decided to move out of state. He said, we packed our bags, hit the road to a new state, but we'd jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. A giant shout out to Ebby on his team for her incredible support, unwavering dedication, and tireless effort. Together, they turned our long distance deal into a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. And Wes hears this a lot from people who are like, I'm not even waiting to sell my house to leave. I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave now. And then I'm going to have somebody sell my house. And Wes is the guy. You can go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes. Go to his website, sellwithwes.com. You can get a look at all the listings that he's successfully sold recently, what they were able to accomplish for clients while you're there. You can check out the potential value of your home. Use their home value calculator right there on the top of the website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then you can get the process started with Wes. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. All right. So, of course, Starbucks is opening another HQ in Tennessee. Although, as I've said, a company like Starbucks doesn't need two HQs. There's no reason for them to do that unless their plan is to empty the HQ in Seattle and to eventually move people to Nashville. And it seems like that is absolutely what's going to happen. The Seattle Times, Seattle-based Starbucks is reportedly considering leasing enough Tennessee office space for up to 2,000 employees, far more than previously acknowledged. Yeah, no S-H-I-T. Of course they are. So here's from CoStar, which writes a lot about like business lease spaces and stuff. And it kind of puts this into context as to just how much space Starbucks is picking up in Nashville. So it says that this deal could set a post-pandemic record for a company purchasing or leasing office space in Nashville. So it might be the most office space leased by a single company since the pandemic was over in Nashville, which I think is pretty significant. It says Starbucks plans to debut a corporate hub in Nashville, Tennessee. Those plans are brewing quickly with the global coffee giant searching for space that could materialize into one of the region's largest office deal in years. The Seattle-based chain has put out spatial requirements of about 250,000 square feet, according to people with knowledge of the search. And that's not as big as their Seattle HQ, but for an HQ that they're opening in a brand new place that they haven't had a footprint before, that is pretty significant, and they can always grow that. It says, while no deal has been finalized and the company has yet to land on a specific property, those guidelines alone, if fully realized, would inject a boost to Nashville's leasing volume at a point when the market is rebounding to pre-pandemic levels of demand. And so it says that it talks about a couple of the people that they're working with, and a building that they might scoop up down there. So good for Nashville, and that obviously injects a lot of revenue into Nashville's economy, and it'll help increase building prices for other people in Nashville and for building owners at a time when building values in Seattle are plummeting, which what does it do? It hurts overall revenue because it lowers property taxes. Another company announcing it has jobs leaving Washington State, Rise Baking Company in Kent. Of course, all this in the backdrop of the income tax on billionaires that Democrats just passed in Olympia on top of a million other taxes on businesses that they've passed in the last, 5 to 7 years. So they'll be laying off 120 people locally. They notified the state about this already. It says Rise Baking Company optimizes manufacturing footprint to expand production capacity. That's just a nice way of saying we're laying people off, isn't it? It says Rise Baking Company, home to some of the most trusted brands in the baking industry, announced a major expansion of its Pleasant View, Utah-based facility as part of a broader strategy to optimize its manufacturing network and support growth across multiple product categories, including increased pie production capacity. But the growth is not happening in Washington State. That's happening in Pleasant View, Utah. Meanwhile, as part of this strategy, Rise Bacon Company will consolidate its manufacturing footprint in the coming months, including the closure of its Kent, Washington facility. It says the decision to close the Kent facility was made after careful consideration. The company recognizes the impact this has on employees and their families. And why wouldn't you, right? Why wouldn't you expand in a place like Utah if you can produce more for less? That makes us that's a business decision. And so, yeah, they're probably upset that they have to lay people off, but it's a business decision that makes a lot of sense. And if Bob Ferguson was smart, he'd be reading all of these headlines. He still has time to decide against the income tax and to veto it. Of course, he's not going to do that. And then a reminder that you can track all the companies leaving Washington State. There's this great website set up, leftwashington.org, leftwashington.org. Right now, it's at about 55 companies impacted who've decided very recently to leave Washington State or to lay people off, which already is $165 million in estimated lost tax revenue. So this is going to be an absolute disaster for Washington State's economy, but keeping you up to date on all the people who are fleeing. The story next is interesting because I have a couple split opinions about it that might be unpopular with you guys. But an eighth grader in Anacortes, Anacortes senior, accused of selling drugs to an eighth grader, is in jail on $150,000 bail. And some city officials are contributing to a GoFundMe for him. We'll dive into all the weird details of it. First, our friend Dave Taylor at First Mark Insurance knows what it's like to run a business in Washington State. It's not easy. The costs are absolutely adding up. And yes, insurance is one of those costs that businesses have to deal with.
We're seeing the impact of just increased cost on businesses, mm-hmm. like their increased cost for their, you know, their workers' comp, the L&I stuff, all the stuff they have to go through to maintain their business.
Yeah.
And then insurance, it just is one of those items that's increasing right along with it. The property values, you know, and rates for property insurance are going up. So, yeah, so it's tough on business owners for sure.
But that's the benefit of working with a local company to get your insurance needs. Dave Taylor and First Mark Insurance know what you're dealing with. They have to deal with the same cost too as a business. And so they're going to make sure, and we use First Mark for our insurance needs at Undivided, they're going to make sure that you have the best possible price and that you're only paying for the insurance that you absolutely need, but you have insurance that's going to cover you in the event that, you know, something happens to your business or with your business. So firstmarkinsurance.com, you can use them for your business needs or personal needs. I use First Mark for both. Absolutely love them. Firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. Okay, this was an article published in Go Anacortes. We took a bet that not a lot of you read that publication, and so we thought we'd cover the story here on Undivided. And I have some mixed feelings about it. So the headline, Anacortes High School senior arrested, accused of selling fentanyl and cannabis to an eighth grader. Jesus, eighth grader? Look, I dabbled in the Mary Jane when I was in high school, but eighth grade? No way. Absolutely not fentanyl, of course. So it says an Anacortes High School senior has pleaded not guilty to allegedly possessing fentanyl within a school zone, as well as delivering fentanyl and cannabis to an eighth grade student. Zacchaeus LeVincent Hawkins, 18, was arrested March 4th after prosecutors charged him on March 2nd with three drug-related felonies: possession of fentanyl in a school zone with intent to deliver, delivery of fentanyl to a minor, and delivery of cannabis to a minor. So it is notable that he is a high school senior, but he's 18 years old, so they're treating him like an adult because he is an adult. Hawkins is being held at the Skagit County Community Justice Center in Mount Vernon on $150,000 bail. So a little bit of information in this article about the police investigation and what led to this. It says on February 20th, a paraeducator allegedly overheard Hawkins tell another student during class that he sells bags of marijuana for gas money, and that he had given an eighth grade student cannabis in exchange for a gift card. Principal Erin Duez subsequently removed Hawkins from class to question him and search his vehicle, where she allegedly found three bags of suspected cannabis labeled with prices. Police later field tested the contents of the bags, all of which came back presumptively positive for both cannabis and fentanyl. So the weed was laced with fentanyl. Now, whether he knew the weed was laced with fentanyl, I doubt that. I doubt he did. But apparently, he hadn't done this just once. He'd done it multiple times. And then that gift card he got in exchange from this eighth grader for weed, apparently, like, there wasn't money on it or the amount of money he was promised. And so then police say he threatened the eighth grader, presumably with physical violence. It was sort of vague, but threatened the eighth grader if he did that to him again, right? So there's a little bit of a threat element. Now, a couple things before I get to the issue of the GoFundMe. So 12th grader, 18, selling what he believes, I assume, is weed to an eighth grader for a gift card and what he says is gas money. $150,000 bail is a lot. And maybe they just do things different up in Anacortes and Mount Vernon, but you could kill someone in Seattle and sometimes they aren't given $150,000 bail. I also would probably say, given the amount that he had, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I don't think that he knew it was laced with fentanyl. So you've got a situation. What, Nicole?
So one of the threats that the parent overheard was that he said, if you don't pay up, I'm going to give you some laced with fentanyl.
Oh, I didn't read that in there.
So that was a threat that he made, implying that he knew something he had was
laced.
Pull
it up and read me what it says, because I don't have that in front of me.
Threaten the eighth grader with laced stuff if he didn't pay.
Oh, okay. So maybe he did know that it was laced with fentanyl. I had not said that part of it, or I had not read that part of it. So I still think that $150,000 for an 18-year-old who's accused of basically trying to sell laced weed to an eighth grader, I think that's too much. I think that's a little unusual, which is why I was like, we need to reach out to the prosecutor's office, and we have done that. However, so there's a GoFundMe right now trying to raise money for him to get out, for him to make bail. The GoFundMe is Bring Zacchaeus Hawkins Home and Fight for His Future. It says, my name is Jawan John Hawkins, and I'm fighting for the life of my 18-year-old brother. He's a protector. He's the second oldest of six children. Our family fled Ohio for Washington State to escape a household of severe abuse. We came here seeking safety, but Zeke's path led him in a different kind of struggle. So anyway, they're saying he's basically a kid who fled an abusive situation, and he fell into the wrong life, and he shouldn't be stuck in jail on $150,000 bail. Okay. Fine. I really don't have an issue. I've said this before. I don't have an issue if GoFundMe is used to collect bail money for people. I know that at some point was banned from certain platforms. If people want to give their money to literally anything, I don't care. As long as it's not illegal activity in what the money is going to go pay for. But if it's going to go pay for his bail and you want to give him that money, I don't care. Here's the problem I have. It says the GoFundMe campaign has so far raised about $4,400 in donations from about 60 people, including Anacortes City Council member Anthony Young and city attorney Darcy Swetnam. The city attorney in Anacortes, the city's chief prosecutor, donated to the GoFundMe for an 18-year-old who's accused of selling laced fentanyl to an eighth grader. What in the holy hell? So Go Anacortes reached out to both of them. It says the city attorney did not immediately respond to the request for comment, but the city council member, Anthony Young, did. Says, while the city council member does not personally know Hawkins, he said he decided to donate to the teenager's legal defense after learning that Hawkins had been homeless and lacking parental support and had been attending school despite having to commute to Mount Vernon or from Mount Vernon. Okay, so he was commuting from Mount Vernon to a high school in the city that you serve as a council member for and selling drugs to an eighth grader that could have killed him because it was laced with fentanyl, and you feel worse for him than you do for the eighth grader? I mean, it's one thing for a city council member to donate to a GoFundMe for someone accused of three felonies in their jurisdiction. Entirely different thing for the city's top prosecutor to do it. How am I to believe that you're, and the city prosecutor isn't the one who's going to try this case because this is a felony. So it's going to be held by a county prosecutor. But still, there are drug related cases that go to the city prosecutor in Anacortes. How are we going to believe that you're going to handle those with the seriousness that the issue demands? And of course, white guilt lady. I just knew it. I didn't even see the picture. I knew she would look like that. Color me shocked. But honestly, how can you, that's a total conflict of interest. How can we believe that you're going to prosecute crimes and treat crimes seriously and hold criminals accountable if you're donating to a GoFundMe for someone accused of, in your city, selling drugs to an eighth grader that could have killed him? Like, we can have a whole conversation about the bail. I think the bail amount is weird. I don't understand it. We've reached out to the prosecutors. Just in the context of other, we cover bail situations all the time. There are people accused of violent crimes who don't have their bail set at $150,000. Maybe it's because he's like homeless and they don't know if he'll appear for court. So we're going to get to the bottom of that. I maybe have an issue with that. But I certainly am not going to go give him money to get out of jail if I'm the city prosecutor. That is absolutely insane. I don't know how you justify that in any form or fashion. We've reached out. This news outlet reached out to try to get comment. Wasn't successful in doing so. Totally inappropriate. I think you have to take every case involving drug abuse and drug dealing or whatever it is away from that prosecutor's office, because she's clearly got an issue with holding people accountable for that kind of conduct. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement? Are you concerned with what's happening in Iran and what that might mean for your retirement portfolio? Well, our friend Zach Abraham with Buller Capital is having one of his free live webinars coming up April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. And he's going to talk about all of that, probably more of a focus on Iran than he had initially intended. It was going to focus a lot on AI, crypto, tech, other market noise. But given what's happening with the price of oil and all of that, I think he'll probably answer a lot of questions about that. So full schedule to help you cut through the noise of what's happening across the world right now. And he'll focus on the real fundamentals of value investing, a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar, April 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. It's totally free. You can register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. And if you can't make it, you can schedule your own personalized Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, another story I'm a little bit iffy on how I feel. I know I have an opinion show, but I'm not scared to admit that sometimes I really struggle with how to feel about a particular political story. So this is out of the state of Idaho. The headline, Idaho House passes criminal transgender bathroom ban in businesses. Nicole smiles. She loves this shit. She loves it. In businesses and government buildings. So under House Bill, am I right? I am. Under House Bill 752,
something's gonna happen.
Repeat offenders could face felony convictions and up to 5 years in prison if they go in the wrong bathroom. It says the Idaho House on Monday widely passed a bill to criminalize willfully entering public and government bathrooms and changing rooms designated for another sex. The bill would effectively block transgender people from using their preferred public bathrooms in Idaho, expanding on the state's transgender bathroom ban in public schools. So it creates criminal misdemeanor and felony charges for people who knowingly and willfully do this. And then you would have to do it like multiple times, as I said, for it to turn into a felony. So the first offense would be a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail. And then the second offense, blah, 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 and on from there. Okay. I know there are some exemptions in this, but I use male bathrooms all the time. I use dude bathrooms all the time. I'm sorry. There's always a longer line for the women's.
You do and the men not don't care. Make I it would a regular say, thing. That's only if it's like empty, I'm sure. Then it's that's different.
Well, yeah. If there's this men at the urinal, I'm not going to walk in there.
Right.
But if it's empty and there's a women's line, I'm going in the dudes. And no dude cares if a chick goes in
that's
there.
That's true. That's the difference.
Right. That's mm-hmm. the difference. And the bill's sponsor, Cornell Rossor, a Republican, said that it's about protecting women and girls. But obviously, you can't just have that carve out that way and say it's okay if a transgender person goes in the boys, but not in the girls. So would I be in trouble if I'm, you know, because if I'm at a bar or something and it's like six women waiting in line, I'm going in the dude's bathroom.
If there's no dudes in it. But I mean, it's yeah. not a regular thing. This is obviously meant to get the perverts out of the women's bathroom.
But do they belong in prison?
I think maybe this threat of prison and mm-hmm. then a court can decide what their intent was. If their intent was just to get out of the like longer line, then I think that the court would see that and it wouldn't be prison time.
No, I'm okay with a fine. Mm-hmm. Like I'm okay with a fine. Like, look, dude, you keep going in the girls' bathroom. It's weird. That's mm-hmm. a fine. At the same time, there are some people who do it to be predators. right? But if you engage in predatory behavior in the bathroom, then that's a different crime. Like the guy who was J-O-ing in the women's locker room, wherever that was, like to me, that's a predator and that's a different kind of crime, right? So I don't know. I feel like you criminalize the behavior that happens in there. But like just the act of going in, I struggle with that. I mean, definitely not prison.
And I assume because they're all private spaces, right, that it's up to the private company to enforce that rule. So yes, if that private company is like, Brandy, you're a problem because you're going into the men's restroom all the time.
Trespass me for the business.
Well, but then I mean, then they can say like, this person's a problem. I don't think that they're going to say, okay, there was no line. And so I'm like gonna turn you in.
I can't bring myself to look at the live chat because I know I'm being roasted. I know I'm being aggressively roasted today, but that's fine. I don't know the solution. I don't know the solution. I just don't think prison is appropriate.
This is the solution. I think this is the solution. So I am willing to stand in a line if it means we can keep predators out of women's bathrooms.
Okay. So you're saying I got to give up my predilection for going into the man's bathroom.
To keep the predators out. Okay.
Gotcha.
Here's the solution.
Very curious. I know I'll have Miranda's going to pick the ones where you're being the meanest to me because she's my sister and that's what she's going to do. And that's fine. And I'll read those comments too. This might be my favorite story ever. The State Department just made it cheaper to renounce your U.S. citizenship, which I thought it was weird that it cost money. I had no idea it cost money to renounce your U.S.
That's
citizenship.
That's a Biden thing, I guess.
And I guess there's like, you know, filing and fees and the government has to do something for you to say, I'm no longer a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. So this is for all the blue-haired people who are trying to flee to Canada and stuff. And they hate America because of Trump. Bye. Bye. It's now 80% cheaper, but it's still $450. And I feel like a lot of those blue hairs aren't going to be able to cough that up. So that's...
If you can afford to move to another country because you don't want to live here anymore... Then you can afford $450.
Sure, but honestly, I think we should make it free. It should be free. You don't want to be an American? By all means, I will do that. Like,
no take backs.
Marco's like, I will do that personally. I will absolutely do that. So it says, after years of legal battles with several groups representing Americans wanting to give up their citizenship, the department on Friday published a final rule in the Federal Register that reduces the cost from $2,350 to $450. $2,000 is a little high.
Yeah, that was Biden.
Yeah, you should you should be able to escape the country if you really want to do so. Because, I mean, we can send all these blue hairs to Iran. They think women are treated so poorly in the United States.
Right.
Let them go to Iran and renounce their U.S. citizenship. So the fee took effect on Friday. It had been promised in 2023, but never implemented under Biden. So it's being implemented under Trump. And the cost is now the same as it was when the State Department first started charging Americans to formally renounce their citizenship in 2010. So now it's just going to be the same price. And here's a little information that I didn't know. Renouncing your U.S. citizenship can be an intensive and lengthy process. Applicants must repeatedly confirm in multiple written and verbal attestations to a State Department counselor officer that they understand the implications of the step before being allowed to take a formal oath of renunciation. It must be then reviewed by the State Department. Now, I get that because, like, what if you're crazy? What if you're mentally ill? You can't just be like, I don't want to be an American. No, you have to go through a certain process and do an oath to formally renounce your citizenship.
But isn't it crazy that we'll make people go through that process to leave the country, but to, you know, get in and do whatever they want
just
here.
Come across the southern border, not anymore under Trump, but
we just let anybody in.
Well, I mean, but the citizenship process is far more intensive than that. But yes, the entering the United States illegally through Mexico process is very, very simple.
And to vote, we should make everybody take a mental aptitude test to vote.
Yes.
Make sure they're making decisions for the right reasons.
Amen. I agree. All right. In our subscriber show poll, so this goes back to the story about Seattle trying to clear homeless people out. And I know there's a lot of you who tell me all the time in comments that you don't go to Seattle anymore either or already, regardless of the World Cup or whatever is happening. And my husband, it's very hard to get him to go to Seattle. Like, we're not going on date nights in Seattle, you know? But I asked you guys, do you plan to attend any World Cup games or festivities in Seattle this summer? If not, why not? Nicole, do you have any plans to attend any games or any sort of like events that might happen?
Number one, soccer is not really my jam.
Yeah.
And then number two, I'm leaving the country.
Wait, what?
I'm leaving the country while they're here.
Citizenship? Oh, no. Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I think we're leaving the country. We have a little break on the show as well. So,
and
yeah.
I would love to rent out my house, make a little extra cash, but I don't think my cats would appreciate it.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah, soccer's gotten a little too Antifa for me. I don't, especially the Sounders fans. Yeah, not my jam either. I'm surprised by these numbers, though. 95% of you said no, you're not attending.
And I know it is expensive. They priced out a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. Super expensive.
I guess you could go to the bar or something. But I actually, you know, if you were to put our listeners in a box and say which sport, like go to the box or put them in boxes and say which one chooses football, which one chooses soccer, which one chooses baseball. I'm guessing most of ours are in baseball and football. So
yeah, well,
it's not super surprising to me.
I agree. For some reason, soccer fans do tend to be a little more liberal, don't they?
They do.
Yeah. Amanda, it would be an overcrowded nightmare to even try to get into downtown Seattle to attend the games. Ham Fam, local pub in Hoquiam, Washington is where we'll be going to watch any of it, much less human excrement on the sidewalk and risk of hatchet attack by deranged vagrants.
I mean, I think they are doing events. I shouldn't laugh because that is true. And Everett. So I think they're doing events all over the Sound. But nobody's going to Seattle for this crap.
I've got to say, yeah, William, getting to the games is way too hard. Tom, getting to downtown an hour to over 2 hours, dealing with closed roads, buses and bike lanes and ridiculous parking fees. Total nightmare. I avoid it as much as possible. I definitely don't think... I know we've debated this before. Mm-hmm. Compared to like other cities across the world that have hosted the World Cup, Seattle is safe. Comparatively to like third world countries and places that have hosted the World Cup. So I'm not going to be like, this is a, oh my gosh. Some of these people are coming from third world countries to watch it. They're going to think Seattle is freaking beautiful.
Right.
But we know that Seattle, comparatively in the United States, is not. So,
it's a smaller space. If you go to LA, there's just more space to keep people in the good areas, right? So you have the bad area. San Francisco, there's like very specific areas for the bad zone.
Yeah, but the bad area is the stadium area in Seattle.
Yeah, it's
because it's Chinatown International District, Pioneer Square, and then on Third, right by Pike Place Market.
Well, that's
so the worst areas are the areas.
Well, that's what I mean. There's no escaping it in Seattle. Yeah. I mean, you can maybe go to a little walkway of the waterfront and maybe escape some, but even then you're still got to watch your back. People have been stabbed
That guy got shot in his wheelchair. There was just the trial on that.
That's what I mean, is there's no escaping it here, where I think some other cities are able to keep them away from the high traffic areas.
Yeah, most of you are saying you just don't have any interest in soccer. I am happy for the businesses, though. Seattle businesses definitely need that. They had a good time during the Seahawks because the Seahawks went into the pro season, had gotten home field advantage, and so that was great for businesses. And this will be good for businesses, too.
What businesses, though? Well, there's not much left down there.
I know, but the businesses that are still there, you know, and for the hotels and all of that stuff, and for the market, hotel, I think that'll be good. All right. Coming up next, some news we broke on social media yesterday about the people's sheriff running for re-election. I'm personally very excited about it. We'll get your reaction. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing. So there's a couple things that you need to look at. I mean, take a good look at your roof. We had that massive windstorm and snowstorm. Did you get snow in your house?
It did.
You did, yeah. So I think a lot of people in Western Washington got snow. But if you, you know, maybe your roof is looking a little rough in certain areas. We had a couple neighbors who had branches come down. Reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, and they can just come take a look at it. I mean, the last thing you want is for your roof to give out in the middle of some big storm like that. And they have a great deal going on right now at Valentine. You can get a year of free roof maintenance if you get a new roof with them. And that's going through the end of March. And so I think that's a killer deal, only through the rest of March. And they have flexible financing options. So if you're worried about the cost of a new roof and you're like, oh, let's just see if I can hold on a little bit longer. That's a terrible idea. They can help you out $159 a month for some of their financing options. And then you get that great promo that they're running right now. So call Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, to get a free estimate. 206 Roofing. They can also help you knock out your spring to-do list. I'm going to have them come once the crazy weather is done and clean the exterior of our house, because that is long overdue. I've been complaining about it for several months now. All right. We broke this news on social media last night. Adam Fortney, the former Snohomish County Sheriff, is officially running again. So the election is not until 2027. It's sort of a weird off-year election. Of course, you know that Adam Fortney was the sheriff in Snohomish County. the Democrats ran someone against him. He lost, narrowly lost his bid for re-election in 2023, which I've got to say really broke my heart. I remember the lead up to that election where we, you know, were out there and we were campaigning for him, but at the last minute, like in the final weeks, because I didn't even think it was going to be a problem. I was like, oh, of course Adam will get reelected. He was doing a great job. Crime was down, constitutional sheriff. And I was like, wait, what? She has a chance of winning? Because Democrats threw a ton of resources behind her.
And they just lied. They had a whole website set up about
that he was a right-wing, like white nationalist, all sorts of crazy, insane lies. And so I think we just got involved too late. Not that we would have maybe made the difference, but he didn't lose by very much. And so he is now going to run again. And this comes, of course, at a very interesting time. But first, let me just read a part of his statement. He said, we must build a sheriff's office that attracts professionals who not only have the skills to serve, but also the commitment to integrity, service, and community trust. In a time when communities often feel divided, we need leadership that brings people together, leadership that listens, is transparent, and puts people first. And, you know, the new sheriff, I haven't met her, but she did help divide people because she was allowing these attacks against Adam Fortney, who, you know, has been a lifelong public servant in the military and in the sheriff's office. She just allowed people to attack his character on her behalf. And I'm sorry, somebody with integrity does not do that. And just outright lies about him. But this decision for him to run again obviously comes at a very interesting time because the law that the state legislature just passed. They just passed a law that will allow an unelected board of bureaucrats to decertify an elected sheriff and remove them from office. I called it the Adam Fortney bill. Because Adam Fortney, because he cares about the Constitution, became this like controversial figure. And I say that in quotes because he's not controversial at all. He cared about public safety and the rule of law. Wow, that is controversial. By the way, he's like the nicest person you could ever want to meet. He is such a stand-up guy. So that's what's so hard about the attacks. But I mean, would they use that new law against him if he wins? I think there's a very high likelihood they would. But he knows that and he's getting into the race anyway. I think for him and Keith Swank down in Pierce County, if they're going to use that new law on anyone, they'll use it on Keith Swank first. And I don't know how that's going to go down, but it's not going to be pretty because there's going to be like a revolt and it might get violent. And then if Adam Fortney wins in Snohomish County, can you imagine how quickly they'll try to decertify him over whatever made up nonsense? So I'm very happy to see him running again. He was a great sheriff when he was sheriff. Such a bummer that he lost. But I mean, when a political party decides in a race like that, races for sheriff usually aren't very expensive. Like they don't bring in a ton of money, a ton of outside influence. But that race did. They wanted him out. And in this state, if Democrats want someone out, man, they're going to spend a lot of money to do it. So it's pretty early. I don't think you'll see him doing a lot of active campaigning for the next maybe 6 months or so. But yeah, I mean, we're going to start to see. It's crazy because you'll have the midterms. And then not long after that, you'll have people jumping into the governor's race. There's a U.S. Mm-hmm. Senate race. So 2028 and the 2027 races.
I will say, I just want Adam back because like I live in Everett.
Yeah.
And he had really cleaned up the area that's kind of around me.
I mean,
homeless
that.
And drugs had kind of. He had set up this remote sheriff's office or whatever, and he was there a lot and they were really taking care of the area. And then she came in, and that I've never seen a car in the driveway. Adam says he goes there still once in a while, but he's the only one. And it's all back.
And they tried to recall him while he was in office, and it was unsuccessful. So, and it's like, for what? He was never controversial. Mm-hmm. If trying to fight crime is controversial, like, that's the job. It's the sheriff.
The business owners loved him because he would meet with them and it was helping, you know, take care of the rocks being thrown at the dealership cars and things like that were dissipating.
Yeah. So I'm happy, but I know that that's a hard decision because, and we know Adam and his wife Jill very well. And we know this was, you know, something they were thinking about, but I was a little surprised when we got the message yesterday that this is like, he's registered on the PDC. I was like, good for him. But all the hate and vitriol they went through, I'm kind of shocked they're doing it again, to be honest.
And starting early.
Yeah, starting early.
Bring it on.
Getting it out. I know. All right, some comments from the live stream, although I know Miranda put all the ones of me in there. Just ra-da-da. Joe Kent stepping down. Sergeant Pickles. Kent always struck me as an honest guy. Sad to see Trump take a cheap shot on his way out. He didn't agree with the mission, so he resigned, and that's the honorable thing to do. But didn't Joe Kent take a cheap shot too? So
I feel like
cheap shots back and forth.
I thought Trump was pretty reserved in his response, actually. He kind of just pivoted a little bit.
Right. But it's stupid for Trump to say, I never thought he was good on security.
He was kind of weak. Yeah.
Then don't give him that job. That's a weird thing to say.
Maybe never met after he got the job. And then and sure. this and then that, you know, he was under Tulsi, so Trump was letting Tulsi deal with it.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe Tulsi agrees. I have no idea. She hasn't said anything about it. I haven't seen a lot of her, honestly. Weiss Castle. Iran is a cartel of terrorism. It's been an active threat for decades. Their goal is death to America. We should believe them. Yeah, and that's the thing. When do you, how imminent do you want it to become? And I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert on foreign affairs. I hate when podcasters, a news event happens and all of a sudden they act like they've known everything about that issue their whole lives and they're an expert and they've read every book on it. But, you know, I would say that Iran poses an imminent threat to the United States. They tried to kill Donald Trump. That's an imminent threat. On Seattle rushing to hide the homeless before the World Cup. Notice we say hide, not help. They're going to hide the homeless, not help the homeless. Mama Pillow, Seattle's World Cup is going to be a colossal disaster. William says the saddest part is they don't even care about the homeless. Of course not. If they cared about the homeless, they'd help the homeless. They're not helping the homeless. They're helping them stay homeless so they can keep the money coming in. On the Anacortes city attorney giving to the GoFundMe for the alleged drug dealer, Chuck says, oh, no. He says, I guess I'm the sponsor for the unbelievable segment. Do I get to do the boop? Did I not boop again today? I'm sorry, you guys.
I don't know.
I'm just in.
I missed it.
I was focused. I was very focused. Let's see. Shannon, but doing drugs on the streets is okay and no arrest. I'm so tired of these GoFundMes for the criminals. Yeah, you can do drugs. Well, doing drugs is different than selling drugs. Doing drugs is a much different sort of crime than dealing drugs laced with fentanyl to an eighth grader.
And again, I'm okay with his family trying to raise some money because everybody deserves, you have a right to bail.
Right.
But the fact that the city attorney, people that don't know him getting involved because they...
Right. Oh, he's a sad story.
It's the politics or something.
Everybody has a sad freaking story. Get over it.
Oh, yeah. And we've talked about this before, but the pictures that they used of him, you know, were this beautiful picture of him as a teenager and then a football picture. And, I mean, he threatened an eighth grader.
Yeah. Yeah. Mama Pillow, it's attempted murder, Brandy, not just a weed sale. But he's not being charged with attempted murder. I get it that, like, it could have killed the kid because it was laced with fentanyl, but he's not being charged with attempted murder. Julie B., we live in Anacortes, and it has become very woke in the past few years. Anacortes has always been pretty woke lefty, loony lefty.
It has, yes. Yeah. And I will say that we have been talking about the Skagit County prosecutor recently because of the Burlington girl getting beat up.
And
so the same prosecutor. So, you know, I mean, as much as we're like, oh, that's really high, I mean, I'll take it over some of these other people not giving bail to anybody. I mean, just letting people out. And so I don't want us to necessarily complain because I appreciate there is a problem up there with drugs and gang activity and all of these other things. So maybe this is them like, we're serious. We're done.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I would like to see a statement from
you. You do have a constitutional right to bail. And there's a lot of considerations that you have to take into account. And indigence.
But if they're trying to crack down on whatever ring he's in,
that's why we reached out to the prosecutor's office, because I wanted to see if there was something contained in the court documents that would explain to me why the bail was so much higher than we're used to it being. But yeah, you're right. Let's see. Julie B. just finishing that. She says there are planned protests against conservatives every Wednesday and Sunday at noon. I've covered one of those. The bail is definitely appropriate if he was threatening to kill someone. Selling drugs laced with fentanyl is violent because it could kill the intended target. On Idaho making... using the wrong bathroom, criminal. SSR's garage. I think the threat of prison will be enough to keep bad actors out of the women's bathroom. Like with all other laws, the arrest will be case by case. Tyrone says prison for Brandy. That's fine. I would freaking thrive in prison. I don't think you understand. I would thrive in prison. I would be the head bee in charge.
Okay.
You don't think so?
You said you shouldn't be in prison. You're too pretty for prison.
Well,
right,
no.
But
did I say I'm too pretty for prison?
That was what comes to mind, but it was something along those, like, when we were, we've had this conversation before.
I feel like I would get along well with people.
But I do think that you would, you would have your own little gang in prison.
Yes, 100%. Lachman, you too. Sorry, Brandy, there needs to be a big pushback against bathroom use by opposite sex. There needs to be clarity on this issue. And it is like give an inch, take a mile. That's how we got to this place, right? Where it was like used to be people who'd been transgender, not bothering anyone. They totally look like a chick and they're in there and they're out. And then it got to dudes with full beards and mustaches and skirts like Jay Owen in the bathroom when kids are present. You know what I mean? I hate saying the J-O, but what are you going to do? On Rubio making it cheaper to renounce your citizenship, Crafty Grandma Crispy, the blue hairs can run and go find me to raise funds to renounce. Can run a GoFundMe to raise funds to renounce citizenship. I will contribute to that. I want to renounce my citizenship. I'm like, here's a check. Here's a check.
Rosie O'Donnell and Ellen DeGeneres.
Let's see. Nicole's cat on you possibly renting out your home for the World Cup. No, we would not like any strangers here, Mom. Make sure you leave some Best of Undivided for me while you're gone. Yeah, we'll do something for that week that we're gone. A couple super chats. West Motorsport. I flew to Texas to go see Supercross instead of go to Seattle. Yeah, probably funner in there. Baron of Gray Matter, don't go to Seattle and give that socialist mayor and city council more tax money. Let her reign over her third world asshole. It isn't safe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, but don't you agree that they're owed a little credit for at least admitting we want to deal with this before the World Cup? Because it always offended me when the former mayors would be like, no, that was pre-planned. Like, I remember this one time I had an interview with former mayor Jenny Durkin down in Pioneer Square. This is when I was in TV. And I got there and it was spotless. Now, I'd been down to Pioneer Square quite a bit. It was never spotless. Mm-hmm. And I had a deep suspicion that before this formal sit-down interview, we were doing something about some sort of activity or expansion down there. I was like, they came and cleaned this. And I was asking around a few people, and this homeless guy, he's like, was playing a chess. Mm-hmm. They have the chess boards. He was like, yeah, it looks really good right now. And I was like, I knew it. Like, they came and cleaned this. And it always offended me when they didn't just admit it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a partial PR campaign, because I think we are known as a scary city, especially with the socialist mayor. And at this point, she has to assure people that, FIFA and the president that no, we're taking care of it before you get here. Don't worry. What? So whether she admits it because it's because of those reasons, she's saying, no, it's OK. Yeah. Like, we're fine.
We're dealing with it. All right. Good comments per the usual. We'll get to our closing sanity check, which is a very personal one. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, I've been telling you for years now to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. I've attended a lot of their events across the state. I've spoken to the RHA. I've also hosted some panels on covering housing policy. They've been our wonderful advertisers for a couple years now. And it really is a good resource for you if you're a landlord and you just feel stuck with all these bad housing policies coming out, rent control, etc. So they go down to Olympia, they advocate on your behalf. They also have events across the state, as I said, and they can help you on a one-on-one basis if you're dealing with, you know, paperwork or navigating new laws and regulations. So rhawa.org, it's like $250-$260 a year to become a member. I think that's well worth it. rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I can't believe it. We might finish the show on time today. I always say we do an hour-long show, and it is literally never an hour-long show. And then when it is an hour long, it feels very short. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, it feels super short today, but it's the length it's supposed to be. You were talking pretty fast today. I was talking fast today?
Not too fast, but I was like, whoa, she's rolling.
People have stuff to do. They're on their lunch hour. It's a lunch hour, not a lunch hour and a half. All right, so this is nuts. So, of course, we have that free press lawsuit against the state of Washington. But one of the other defendants in it is not only the state of Washington, but the Capitol Correspondents Association, which is just a loose affiliation of reporters who cover Olympia. And they're named in the lawsuit. But for the record, we're not seeking any monetary damages against them. The state of Washington, maybe a different situation. But as far as the Capitol Correspondents Association, they're kind of a party to the lawsuit. But like Jerry Kornfield is the head of the CCA. I'm not suing Jerry Kornfield for money. So Jerry, if you hear this, don't worry about it. We're not gonna try to squeeze any money out of you. We just want you guys to back off and issue us press passes, because there's a little something called the First Amendment. Only come to find out, and this is a clip from our friend Carlene Johnson at the Center Square, that some newspapers across the state are contributing financially to oppose our lawsuit. Now, the Spokesman Review at least admitted it. They had a little asterisk in their reporting to say, hey, we want to let you know that we've contributed to the CCA's defense in this suit. So literally giving money to try to keep me from having press passes. But we know that there are other newspapers who also have contributed funds but have not disclosed it publicly, which is a total conflict of interest. Here's Carlene.
I did send a follow-up email today to the spokesman's executive editor saying, is this not a conflict? You know, your own reporter in coverage of this story is conceding that your organization is soliciting funds to support the attorney that is fighting against independent journalists to have press credentials in the Capitol. And if so, why are you doing that? I received a response back. She wrote, our reporters and editors are not allowed to involve themselves in political activities, including participating in rallies, giving campaign contributions. If reporters at a political event, they should be there only as a journalist to help inform our readers. I did press further, questioning why the spokesman is at all funding an effort to keep other media out of access. You know, is not a full, press unbridled. It's in our state constitution. You know, if some folks are on the left, some folks are on the right, shouldn't we all have access to ask the questions that maybe some other media outlets are not?
Apparently not. And that's why I say this for them is about self-preservation. There is no other explanation. Their newsrooms are in decline. Their newspapers are failing financially. They see independent media as a threat to their business model. So they are willing to bolster a lawsuit to help the state of Washington make sure I don't get a press pass. Absolutely insane. They should have to recuse themselves from covering the issue at all. Seattle Times, Spokesman Review, anyone involved in that lawsuit should not be able to, that's involved financially in that lawsuit, should not be able to cover it as some sort of unbiased news organization. Unreal. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback, for your support of the show. We appreciate all of you. Is it Monday or Tuesday? What day is it? Oh my God, it's Tuesday. No, I love it. Love
it. It's St. Patrick's Day.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't wear anything green. That's all right. I dare you to pinch me. I literally dare you to come over here and pinch me.
No, I'm good.
You will not be here tomorrow because you'll be buried in my backyard. All right. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye. Fact check. Actually, I just realized I'm wearing green pants. All is well.
I thought so.